Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Institute for Personal Development, where total consciousness is the new frontier. Kriya Yoga is the union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices that initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing all right today. How about you?
I'm doing great today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the deeper meaning behind Halloween. The word hallow means holy, which has its origins in the word whole, and Halloween was also called All Saints' Eve because saints were holy people or whole people. This is one of the earliest understandings of the holiday, which has a much more secular and material meaning today. We've come a long way in a couple hundred years, but what direction are we moving in? What is the real meaning of trick or treat? Listen as we uncover the distinctions between saints and sinners, vice and virtue. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join our Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance. Initiate your process to wholeness. So, Swami, let's talk about Halloween or All Hallows Eve and the celebration of All Saints Day. So in some of my research that I have been doing, the name Halloween does come from All Hallows Eve. And from what I have been able to find out, that it actually dates back to the Middle Ages when poor folks would dress up and they would go door to door on Halloween to ask for food, and in return they would pray or they would sing and so on and so forth. And then another resource I had found is that people would go door to door and they would dress up as evil spirits because the Celtics would believe that on this eve, this marks the end of the year, and then that's also the same time when evil spirits would roam the world. So if you dressed up as an evil spirit, they would recognize you as one of their own. So there's been quite a bit of different histories about Halloween. But let's talk about the trick-or-treat. What does that mean, and how can we prevent ourselves from being tricked?
Yeah, the ultimate April Fool. Well, in my opinion, I really think that on a very deep level, the trick-or-treat has a lot to do with what energy field do I draw from? Because we come in with programming, and we look for food, we look for mother, we look for approval, for validation. And when we find it, we kind of get this sense that I'm okay. And the unfortunate thing about that is that that's actually the trick. And it was up to us to figure out that there was a different source of sustenance that we were to draw from to give us a better return for our efforts. And that connection to that resource is what changes everything. And that becomes the difference between saints and sinners. Saints were those that figured out which energy field was the right energy field to draw from, and the sinners were the ones that missed the mark, that were still drawing from an energy field that wasn't giving you the return that gave you this transformation, that gave you these secret powers that come with it, and not supernatural powers. It was actually played out more as virtue. And so again, there became the difference between vice and virtue. saints and sinners. And it all has to do with what is it that I desire? What is it that I long for? And it comes down to our ability to create this conversion, to go from a human being that is seeking things visible and tangible or invisible and tangible, and to seek this invisible, intangible source of sustenance. But I really think that Halloween has so much to do with celebrating and honoring, or at least acknowledging, the astral plane, the invisible but tangible dimension of reality, the realms of energy which underlies matter.
So like we said in the beginning, we've come a long way from celebrating All Saints Day to this $8 billion industry for Halloween. So in the Kriya Yoga, in Kriya Yoga style, how should we be celebrating Halloween? How would you, in a perfect world, how would you like to see, you know, the masses celebrate Halloween and All Saints Day?
Well, I definitely think, like I say, that it is a way of acknowledging the underworld, that underlying matter is energy. And in the realms of quantum physics, the electron is both a particle and a wave. But it is a particle when it's being observed. So being able to recognize that thoughts are real, visions are real, and to be able to acknowledge that and understand that it is the framework for our reality, that underlying your reality are thought patterns that actually cause the external world to actually adhere to these structures that aren't typically visible, but they are tangible. And so the more we recognize this astral plane, this world of thought, that I think it gives you a better grasp of how we're shaping reality, how we're creating our reality. And again, it makes a clear distinction between saints and sinners. Mm-hmm. Those of us that have figured it out and those of us that are struggling and lost in the mystery of the whole thing. And so looking at the deeper meanings of these rituals and ceremonies that really enriched a person's life as opposed to where it is now. Putting your hand out at somebody's door for candy, and if you don't get it, marking up the house. It just seems so barbaric and so off point and so such a waste of time, just wearing a costume so that nobody knows who you are when you marked up their house.
It does seem kind of silly when you kind of put it that way. Now, I was reading from Wind Calendar. They say that the All Saints Day honors exemplary Christians who achieve sainthood, and this includes unknown Christians and martyrs who have attained beatific vision. And what they mean by that is a form of direct knowledge and communication with God. So I thought that was interesting. So I wanted to get your take on that, especially that phrase, a form of direct knowledge and communication with God. It sounds like that those are the only people that have been able to achieve that. So how can we as a people be able to do the same thing?
Well, one of the things when you research the beatific vision is that it's indescribable. And that's an important thing to understand because it parallels the experience that we have. It's the sleep from which we return where we have no recollection. I mean, we visit this dimension of reality every day, but it's indescribable. And the reason it's indescribable is because our senses work in duality. Our senses work with contrast. And when you enter the invisible unified field, there is no contrast. And so our senses no longer are of any use to us. And what we have to do is develop spiritual capabilities, a sense of being able to attune ourselves to this invisible, intangible dimension. But for those that have made this connection, one of the things that, like I said, you can't talk about it because it's not like the astral plane, which is also dualistic. It's this indivisible unified field. And it's like trying to talk about the sleep that you return from that you have no recollection, because that's our direct connection with it. And what I think that's really valuable is to take your concept of God from the astral plane and make a clear distinction that it isn't visible or invisible but tangible, but it's invisible and intangible. And I think that's what I took away from my understanding of this beatific vision.
So I have a question to ask you as I was reading this. The difference between communing with God and communicating with God. Now, when we commune with God, is this what we're doing when we go through all of our practices? We're trying to commune with God as opposed to communicate. So in other words, I think of the word communicate as a back and forth kind of a conversation. You know, I say something and then God will say something, or, you know, I mean, this is a communication. So how do we know the difference when we're communing with God or if we actually are communicating with God?
Yeah, it's kind of like the difference between praying, P-R-A-Y-I-N-G, and praying, P-R-E-Y. ING, because you want to, this communion with God means that you want to use this resource as a source of sustenance, and you have to get your body on board with that so that your body is using the availability of your number one need as a symbol for validation so that you feel connected to this concept of God, the presence of the Lord. Otherwise, you are communicating with it. Like you say, that separates you from it. And the intention is to become at one with it. And the other thing is that you can't just do it intellectually. You literally have to include the body in the experience. You have to rebirth your body in this life force, this indivisible unified field. And then, like I say, when we do that, that's when the changes really start to happen. And these changes are transformational, that you actually become spirit.
All right, well, we're going to pause to hear a word from our sponsor. So, listeners, we'll return with you shortly.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudashyate.
If you are looking for a samadhi-based experience, IPD Kriya Yoga has the goods. a complete yoga program that includes the practices and the process, starting with the separation from mother, including the labors and tasks of the hero and the return as a whole person. Practice makes perfect only when practice is whole. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. Samadhi, or total consciousness, is experienced by knowing and doing with devotion. Call or click now and get started. 603-929-0303 or www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. And welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So what I'd like to do at this time is we're going to open up the phone lines and see if any of our listeners out there have any questions for Swami about our topic today. So you can, looks like, okay, we have all the phone lines opened up. If you have a question, you can go ahead and shout it out for us. Okay, well, you know, I have a question for you, Swami. I am listening to a book, and in this book, this young man is in prison, and these lawyers are trying to get him out, and he pled guilty to a crime that he didn't do. And they're trying to say to him, well, we can help you, but, you know, we don't want you to be in prison for something that you didn't commit. And he says, well, you know, I have accepted my fate. This is what God wants me to do. And the lawyer says to this person, well, how do you know that's what God wants you to do? How do you know that? He's a very religious young man. And he says, because if he didn't want me to do it, I wouldn't be here. And I feel like I'm doing a lot of good right where I'm at. I am where I'm supposed to be right now. And he couldn't grasp the idea that he has accepted this way of life for himself. And so she says, the lawyer says to him, well, how do you know this is what you're supposed to be doing? He says, I am doing good. He goes, I work in the garment shop. I make clothes, so I'm keeping people clothes. And so to him, he is doing God's will, and he says, this is what God wants me to do. And she's like, well, how do you know that's what God wants you to do? He goes, I just know. And I just thought that was really interesting that this young person had this feeling that that's where he needs to be. And to be able to have that kind of faith and understanding that what you're doing is really for the better good. He goes, I don't understand why I'm here. I just know God wants me to be here. So he feels in his own way that he had this communication with God, and that's how God is reaching out to him.
Yeah, again, I mean, that whole thing is when we think God is a person. And in this model, God is the force right now supporting my life. And for me, I prefer to live my life more according to the serenity prayer kind of a mentality, that I change the things I can, I accept the things I can't change, and I try and know the difference between the two, rather than just kind of hide behind a circumstance and situation and then maybe cloak it with this kind of attitude that this is God's will kind of a thing. That, like, one of the things that we constantly do is we assume responsibility. Now, of course, what isn't conscious is going to be unconscious or karmic. And that's how we'll shape our reality. So we're not just dealing with things that we did from the time they cut the cord in this incarnation, but we also bring in our karmic pattern, which is anything that we might have done in previous incarnations. And those challenges can manifest themselves in a number of different ways. But at the same time, you want to always put yourself in a position where you are trying to optimize your performance. And again, one of the things that's really valuable about this internal connection is an expanded sense of self, which then kind of gives you a sense of, the term we use in yoga is dharma, duty, a collective responsibility. We all have a purpose for this incarnation, and a lot of it has to do with our unique talent, the one thing that we do better than anybody else. And so a lot of times people will make these statements that, you know, this is my dharma, this is my duty, when they haven't even really individuated themselves. They haven't become what's right for them. They don't know what their unique talent is. So they just try and kind of make that up for themselves. So you kind of fill it in, and then of course you then turn it over to that, this is God's will. This is what God wants me to do. This is my dharma. This is my duty. But it's not really your collective purpose, because that comes with this connection. And with the connection, you're going to get virtue to overcome fear. You're going to get wisdom to overcome ignorance. You're going to get enthusiasm to overcome laziness. And then, of course, you're going to get this sense of purpose to overcome selfishness.
You had mentioned earlier vice versus virtue. And it reminds me of when I was a kid, I used to watch on Saturday morning cartoons the Justice League, and it had all the superheroes, and they were, you know, always so virtuous in every episode, and kind of makes you want to have the conduct and the wisdom to be just like a superhero. So I know we've talked about virtue before when we talked about the labors of Hercules. Can we expound upon that as, I mean, would we consider Hercules as being in the same category as a saint?
Well, I definitely think that Hercules was well on his way. That the labors of Hercules is kind of like how we become a whole person. And in the labors of Hercules, the way Alice Bailey presents vice as to render ineffectual, I think it's a really interesting description of vice. And her association with virtue is being virulent, strong. And again, it's so important to understand that it's all going to come down to what energy field do I draw from. And it's kind of like if your lawnmower isn't working because you put water in the gas tank and you keep pulling the cord in hopes that it's at some point going to start up. And then after a while you start to think that this is what you're supposed to do, is just pull the cord. When in fact, you know, there's other things that have to happen. And the same is true with the human mind-body complex. We're not designed to run on particles or waves. We're not designed to run on duality, which is fear and limitation. We're designed to run on this indivisible unified field. And when we join with truth and wholeness, that's when the mind-body complex actually starts up. So it's like you cleaned out all of the water in your lawnmower and the fuel line and the filter and the carburetor, and now you put gasoline in it. Then you pull the cord. And all of a sudden, now it starts up. Now you can cut the grass. And the same is true with the human mind-body complex. that when we draw from this indivisible unified field, things change. You know, and when the mind-body complex starts up, it has capabilities that it didn't have when we were drawing from fear and limitation.
So, but that is the challenge, I think, for a lot of us, is to know, what are we drawing from? What energy field am I drawing from? Because like you said, we may think that we're spiritual, when actually we could be farther from the truth. Isn't that a quote that you sometimes say, that those who believe they are free? How does that quote go again?
Yeah, that's von Goethe. None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe that they're free. Because you don't make any effort to get out. And like we say, I mean, that's the trick or treat. And when of course, you know, you've got your bowl of candy and you're sitting there and you're indulging yourself in candy, you don't have any sense of awareness of what it's like to indulge yourself in this invisible, intangible source of sustenance, because you don't have attention for it. And that's where I think we lack leadership. We really don't have good examples. And so as a result, without really knowing what this human mind-body complex is capable of doing and what it's supposed to do and what it looks like when it joins with truth and wholeness, then, of course, you're just content with just being what we would consider to be normal.
And isn't that subjective? What is normal?
Right, we had that show.
You know, we had that show, that's right. So it really does come down to, like you say, what energy field am I drawing from? You know, and then for us to be able to recognize and know what energy field are we drawing from, and then from there, then we can start making these changes. But like you say, too, is that the change has to also go deep enough. You know, we just can't intellectually say, okay, I'm drawing from this energy field, I'm all set, right? I mean, there's more to it. Like we talk about in other shows, there's a process, there's a procedure. Just can't think it and it's going to happen. You really, there has to be some physical work involved as well.
Right, you have to become addicted to it. You have to desire it. You have to love it. You have to long for it. And until you do, you're still longing for something else because you can't get rid of desire. Physics tells us matter can't be created nor destroyed. We all come in with desire. And what we desire determines nature.
Well, it's about that time. You do have to start closing down the program. So, and listeners, I'd like to invite you to visit the website. Again, it's www.ipdtransform.com. Once you're there, you can post comments about this show or give us some ideas from some future shows. But keep those comments and curiosities and questions coming, because we do enjoy hearing from you. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll have a great show for you next week. And so, Swami, any final thoughts about today's show?
Well, I would like to wish everybody a happy Halloween. And go easy on the candy. And with that, I wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
Yes, and happy Halloween to everybody. And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.